Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, folks. My name is Lynn. I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm here with my wonderful co-hosts, Bobby Neer and Robert. And I hate to mention this, but tomorrow is the 10-year anniversary of the most horrific event in U.S. history, the attacks on the World Trade Center. However, whether I mention it or not, if you turn on your television, the reminders are constant, and the TV specials recounting the event are numerous, and we can only hope that we never live through anything that horrible ever again, and our thoughts and prayers go out to the families and friends of the victims on this furry, non-celebratory anniversary. So, okay. Today's
episode. Now, I think it was tough for everybody, so
I give the same
sentiments as well.
So. Yes, absolutely. I mean, every time I turn the television on, there's another special about it, and yet you can't help but watch. You can't help but watch it. You don't want to watch it, but you do watch it. And I was just reading an article this morning about a man who saved 2,500 people from the building. The South Tower, he saved 2,500 people. He was the head of security for Morgan Stanley, and he saved 2,500 people, but he perished. He made sure that everyone was out, and by the time he made sure everyone was out, the tower collapsed and he died. So, you know, it's heart-wrenching to read some of these stories, but hopefully this will never happen again, I hope. But, okay. Today's episode is titled The Rip Van Winkle Caper. And I'll turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Introducing four experts in the questionable art of crime. Mr. Farwell, expert on noxious gases. Former professor with a doctorate in both chemistry and physics. Mr. Irby, expert in mechanical engineering. Mr. Brooks, expert in the use of firearms and other weaponry. And Mr. DeCruz, expert in demolition and various forms of destruction. The time is now, and the place is a mountain cave in Death Valley, USA. In just a moment, these four men will utilize the services of a truck placed in Cosmoly, loaded with a hot heist, cooled off by a century of sleep, and then take a drive into the Twilight Zone.
Thank you very much, Robert. Thank you so much. Okay, well, the Rip Van Winkle Caper is about four criminals who commit a daring train robbery that allows them to walk away with a very large fortune in gold. Gold bars, to be exact. Bars of gold. The ringleader, Mr. Farwell, he's masterminded an amazing scheme in which the four of them would be placed in suspended animation for 100 years so that when they wake from their glass chambers, they'll be wealthy and free and can simply walk away. So they do wake up 100 years later. In the year 2061, they discover that one of their group, Mr. Irby, has perished in his chamber due to a crack in the glass from a fallen rock that allowed the sleeping gas to escape. And one of the other men, Mr. DeCruz, has decided to eliminate another of his partners and decides to murder Mr. Brooks by running him down with their truck. Yes, the truck is still running after 100 years, believe it or not. However, the truck goes out of control somehow and ends up going over a cliff. So now, Farwell and DeCruz have to walk through the scorching hot desert to the nearest town. So Farwell ends up forgetting his water canteen during one of their rest stops. Oh, God. And DeCruz seizes the opportunity to take advantage of his older partner by charging him bars of gold for every swig of water that Farwell takes from his canteen. Now, this goes on for some time, until at one point, The cruise is not looking, and Farwell beats him over the head with a bar of gold and kills him. So Farwell then proceeds on his journey alone, carrying a very heavy load of gold. He finally collapses from the heat and exhaustion, and he's laying in the desert, barely alive, when a futuristic car drives up. A man walks up to Farwell, Farwell offers the man his gold in exchange for water and a ride in the town. A few moments later, Farwell dies, never realizing that the man and his companion reveal that the gold that he and the other four criminals valued so much 100 years earlier was worthless 100 years later, since a way to manufacture it had been discovered. Yep, that truck was still running 100 years later, and I gotta tell you, a few years ago, I came back from a 2-week vacation, feeling a little under the weather, and within a day and a half, I had all the symptoms of the flu. I got pretty sick, and I didn't leave the house for another 2 weeks. My car remained unmoved in my driveway for a total of 33 days during a very cold January, brutally cold January. I tried to start it up on the 33rd day, and the battery was dead. So it's a shame I didn't own the Wonder Car from the Rip Van Winkle caper that miraculously started up on the very first try after enduring the horrific climate conditions of Death Valley for 100 years. Amazing, absolutely amazing. So instead of worrying about cashing in on gold, they should have sold that antique, well-preserved car, which is probably worth a fortune itself. And or better yet, Farwell should have sold his foolproof suspension animation invention. No, well, maybe not. By 2061, maybe someone already figured it out. But anyway, the cruise destroyed the car, and you know he let his greed overtake his common sense. And it's just incredible that these four men, who were supposed to be such geniuses at masterminding the perfect crime, at least Farwell is supposed to be brilliant, didn't think for 1 minute about how much the world would change over 100 years. I mean, did they expect to simply blend into the crowds? You would think they'd realize they'd stick out like sore thumbs since clothing styles change so much over time. And they won't have any knowledge of current technology, so their ignorance of the trends would be very noticeable. How could they not remember that the styles of cars change every year, making their car look completely out of place a century later? Not that they had to worry about it, they destroyed it anyway, but they were worried about being recognized. Well, I agree with you, Robert. In your review of this episode, you reviewed it and you said that maybe 50 years would have been good enough, or maybe even 30, I don't know. But 100 years was outrageous, and for these guys to be as smart as they were supposed to be, they did not think of that. Come on. Farwell really overdid it. So maybe they could have just suspended themselves up to the point that the statute of limitations ran out on the crime. I don't know. It could be 3 to 8 years. And oh, the other thing. Bobby commented in his review that them simply waking up and getting out of the boxes without showing any signs of a 100-year nap is also a very good point. You mean they just woke up and started walking around? None of their joints, none of their bones, nothing was...
Nails
tight.
Grow, beard, nothing.
Nothing,
yeah.
Exactly. And Farwell tries to say, well, no, that doesn't happen. Well, no, come on. You don't just get up and walk out like that. And then they're reduced to having to walk through Death Valley, and Farwell leaves his canteen behind during one of their stops. Now, I'd be hard-pressed to be that forgetful with my canteen of water while walking through a scorching hot desert. For a genius, he's pretty damn stupid. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And another interesting twist in this episode was the fact that each time the crews sold a drink of water to Farwell for a bar of gold, his load was getting heavier and heavier. So that canteen of water wasn't going to go very far in Death Valley with two men drinking from it, and he was getting heavier and heavier. So maybe a better ending would have been to see the crew sell his last week of water to Farwell for one of his last few bars of gold. Then we see DeCruz can't carry the load any further, which, I don't know, causes him to collapse and die from exhaustion and dehydration. We would then see the man and woman show up in their futuristic car and offer Farwell a drive in the town. Farwell accepts, hands him a bar of gold, and they tell him it's worthless. The shock and horror on Farwell's face would be priceless, and that caused him to have a heart attack. I don't know. I mean, that's the way I look at it. But by the way, that futuristic car, that was a leftover prop from Forbidden Planet from 1956. Just for anyone who would care to know that. Yep. And anyway, for all of its flaws and inconsistencies, I enjoyed the episode. It was a lot of fun to watch. I certainly didn't find it boring. Made me laugh. Kept my interest. Made me laugh. And if you can look, look closely enough at the very end, you can still see Farwell breathing after he's dead. Look real close. He's still breathing after he's dead. I like Oscar Beregi and Simon Oakland. They're both good, but Oscar Beregi, he's always a lot of fun. And guess who's here? Dave. Oh, my God, Dave's here. Hi, Dave. Well, and Felix is here. But anyway, just letting you know that I like the episode. One last note of interest. The truck that they used from this episode, the same truck was used in 100 Yards Over the Rim. The episode we did before this one, that truck coming down the highway, that's the truck they used. Yep, same one.
But Lynn, do you recognize the story of the feel of it, especially from season one? Let's take out the four bandits and put four astronauts in, and one by one the astronauts die until one is left, and he goes over to Sand Hill and finds out that they were never on an alien planet, but they were on Earth.
Now, you know what? I can see that. I can actually see that in this episode. But you know what episode I take more from this? I shot an arrow into the air. Because, yes, I do see the one where you're talking about that one by one they disappear. But if you think about it, I shot an arrow into the air. That's the one where there's four astronauts and one guy is shooting them all because he wants to keep the water. Don't you think that this is almost a duplicate of that episode? Except that one's supposed to be in space, and this one's here on Earth?
Yeah, very much like Dave said, you know, how, you know, I always like to get two stories out of one, so.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Ed, I forget what his name was now, Ed, Ed somebody that played the captain in I Shot an Arrow into the Air, and he was great. And then you got the one guy who's killing everybody for the water at the end, and then he finds out at the end, that they never landed anywhere except on Earth. That their rocket never went anywhere. And this is kind of what this happened. You know, so I can relate to that, yeah. And when Felix is here and he said, did Twilight Zone shoot in the nearby Mojave Desert? Felix, they shot at the same desert. I don't know if it's the Mojave Desert, but it was a desert in California. And they shot at, the one episode for 100 Yards Over the Rim, the exact same setting was used for this one, for Rip Van Winkle Caper. They used the same setting, the same desert, so they figured while they were out there, they were going to shoot the same episodes at the same time. And you're right, same truck was used. So that's all I have to say, and I give it a 3 for good because it was a lot of fun to watch. And I'm going to give this to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, the way I rated this, I rated it more for the story itself because, I mean, it does feel like a retread, but it did have potential. Unfortunately, you know, these goofballs, I don't know how they could even survive 1 year of sleep, let alone 100 years. But, yeah, I had to have the suspension of disbelief for this story to work. One of the things that I did like, at least with this story, is the time travel element of it was cool, and the ending, it had a nice twist, about the gold not being worth anything, because even today, we do manufacture diamonds today, so we can make our own diamonds, so it's not unbelievable that we can't do gold. I mean, maybe not now, but down the road, we probably could. But those were a couple of things that I did like about this story. What I hated about this story was just the way they have everything set up, the whole way things work. It just was very, very unbelievable. The glass showcases used as caskets. I mean, how could they really be that airtight to hold in the gas that it puts into those glass cases? There's no way it's that airtight that they could be put out for that long of time.
Robert, yeah. I have to ask you something. Do you honestly believe that over 100 years nobody would possibly have found them? In 100 years, no one would have found that cave and found those people?
I think they might be able, if you have archaeologists going through there and checking out the area, it's a very much possibility.
Didn't they have the door of the cave? Like, they had that rigged up, that door. So it seems like, why wouldn't someone have found them in 100 years?
Well, I mean, archaeologists go to Egypt, you know, looking through caves and pyramids and stuff like that. So, I mean, just sliding the rock face, you know, over the thing, it's very unbelievable that it wouldn't have been discovered. I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, there's just no way. But it's very much the scene that Serling used for Planet of the Apes. The screenplay was written by him, and rewrites done by Michael Wilson. So I imagine he got the idea for the Planet of the Apes scene from the story, the Rip Van Winkle caper, because it's very much set up, especially where one of the astronauts don't make it, very much in this one where one of the robbers didn't make it. So it kind of leads me to believe that. I mean, this scene was one that Serling used later on when he did rewrites for Planet of the Apes, the 1968 version of it.
Right. But. Yeah, I agree.
Also, another thing is, why walk in the daylight? If you watch any of these movies, what do a majority of these people do? They walk at night when it's cooler.
The sun goes down.
These idiots are walking midday in probably 120 degree heat. With very little water, how far you think you're going to get with those canteens, and especially losing one, you only got one canteen to share among two people in 120 degree. Man, go hide, rest, and get up and walk at night.
Do you seriously believe that somebody left their canteen behind? Come on. Really, Rob? Do you seriously believe that you actually left this big canteen behind? Come on. How stupid are you? And walking in the middle of the day and leaves his canteen. And do you believe that water lasted as long as it did between the two guys?
I mean, you know, and good thing those canisters were tightened, because don't water evaporate after a certain amount of time?
Yep.
So how much water would actually be left in those canteens? I wouldn't think there'd be full canteens of water after 100 years. But still, you know, like I said, suspension of disbelief with this one. Also, the equipment, like you brought up, Lynn. You mean after 100 years, I mean, okay, let's do some believability. At least take the leads off the battery to at least make us think, okay, at least the battery wasn't hooked up, that maybe there is a little spark to turn the car over. But, I mean, to go in there and actually turn the car over... Nah, I don't think
I couldn't do that in a month. I couldn't do that after leaving my car for a month in brutal July weather. I couldn't. My car battery died. And you couldn't. No.
And the brakes went out of the car. It's like, come on. It's just like, oh, my.
I asked, this is great. This is like one of the best for comedy. This was a very, very comedic episode. I had to laugh, and it was fun. It was fun to watch them being so stupid. I couldn't help but laugh.
I have to say, these aren't the smartest of robbers. I'm surprised they were able to get away with the gold unless dropping a few bars behind and somebody tracking them down.
Exactly. And looking at Beregi, you know, the one who played Farwell, you know, he looks like this very intelligent, you know, very sophisticated, brilliant criminal. And he's the biggest idiot of all. He's this freaking canteen behind. Come on.
Like I said, yeah. There's so many unbelievable things about this story that I don't know. But
And they actually, but you got to give them credit. They actually took the time out to bury Irby. Would you, you know, you got three criminals who don't care about anything but themselves and their gold, and you got a bunch of bones. You find a bunch of bones in this chamber, and they actually were compassionate enough to bury Irby in desert sand. So you gotta get We have to bury Herbie.
See, I would have loved the ending where, like in Being Young, I think it was a movie with Jamie Lee Curtis and Mel Gibson, where towards the end, Mel Gibson's character is cryogenically asleep and he's waking back up, but towards the end of his life, he ages rapidly. And that's what I would have loved to see with the character, where at the end, you know, he ages prematurely, and then the only thing left in the desert is the skeleton, and then the, you know, car pulls up, the guy picks up the gold and says, you know, says it's not worth anything, throws it out as they take off. That would have been a nice ending.
That would be great.
To the story, yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we get the death scene where, yeah, hey, take my gold, help me, and then, you know, okay.
Oh, God, you gotta love it. It just, it's, you know, the fact that he even stopped to bury Irby, that right then and there made me say, wait a minute, this isn't even realistic. You have four criminals who only care about themselves, and especially the crews. The crews wanted nothing more than to get rid of everybody, and Farwell's the mastermind. And yet they find out that Irby perched in his casket there, and he's all nothing but bones, and they took the time to bury him in the desert? Come on. Now, I think what they took the time to do was get his ring off his finger. Did you notice he had a ring on? That's probably one of them made sure they got the ring. I'm sure that was the crews. You're going to bury that guy. Cut me a break. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's just, that's the problem with this story. It's just, it's so unbelievable. It just, I mean, I give it 2.5 out of 5 because of the story itself. It had possibilities. I mean, the time travel element I always like, but, I mean, it just really needed to do a much better job. And I know they only had so much money to work with, so you don't have the special effects that you need to make it more convincing. But, I mean, there's other shows that at least made it somewhat convincing. The Flash is one that I mentioned in this review, where called The Ghost in the Machine, where this character plays the ghost, and this guy that he's kind of the shadow character called Nightshade. At least the ghost, to get away, he invented the cryogenic time machine, and that was at least a little bit more believable than what was in this one.
Russell! Bug is still in there!
No one could survive that fire.
Century. Welcoming the new millennium after a nice frozen sleep. City of tomorrow. In my prime, no less.
Touch that dial.
Make this the year you take the jump into large screen technology from Wacky Walters Video Emporium. We've got them all. 178 channels, hi-fi surround sound, cable ready.
178 channels?
Anywhere in Central City.
This is the future.
The other one, Army of Darkness, is one of my favorite with Bruce Campbell, where at the end of the film, there was an alternate ending that they didn't put on, but you can watch it if you get the DVD. And the way they, you know, the end of the movie, it just Bruce Campbell's character, Ash, is back at his job. But the alternate one that they didn't use is a far better one than how they ended the original Army of Darkness. And let me go ahead and I'll play that trailer.
The book tells us that each drop allows a man to sleep for a century. Swallow 6 drops, thou shalt awaken in thine own time.
Six drops.
Ending they should have went with, because that was the most funniest. If anybody ever watched Army of Darkness, one of my favorite movies, and that alternating where he breaks through the rock because he goes into the cave, shuts it, and you heard the explosion, goes to sleep, he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he's interrupted, then he goes back to 5 and 6, which caused him to sleep too long. And now the brutal part is he wakes up, he has a beard, he has, you know, a white beard, and his hair is growing and everything. He's coming out and he's seen the apocalypse happen, and that's where he makes, well, I slept too long. That is more of a more convincing one than that one that, you know, for the Rip Van Winkle caper was. One more thing that comes to mind, too, is the Space Seed episode from Star Trek, where we get Khan, played by Ricardo Montalban, which leads later on to the second Star Trek movie, The Wrath of Khan. I got a little clip here where they come across the cryogenic ship.
Scully. Definitely Earth-type mechanism, sir. 20th century vessel. Old-type atomic power. Bulky, solid. I think they used to call them transistor units. I'd love to tear this baby apart.
Captain, it's a sleeper ship.
Suspended animation?
Uh-huh. I've seen old photographs of this. Necessary because of the time involved in space travel until about the year 2018. It took years just to travel from one planet to another.
Is it possible they're still alive? After centuries of travel?
It's theoretically possible. I've never heard of it being tested for this long a period.
What a handsome group of people.
Jim, you have a new reading.
Captain, look here.
Scotty.
Beats me what's happening.
We've triggered something, all right. Heartbeat's increasing. Now passing 8 beats per minute. There's some signs of respiration beginning.
This one was probably programmed to be triggered first.
Could he be the leader?
The leader, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir. The leader was often set to revive first. This would allow him to decide whether the conditions warranted revival of the others.
Heartbeat now approaching 40 per minute. The respiration pattern is firming up.
From the northern India area, I'd guess. Probably a Sikh. They're the most fantastic warriors.
Heartbeat now 52 and increasing.
The others?
There's no change, and they're all mixed types. Western, mid-European, Latin, Oriental.
A man from the 20th century coming alive.
Maybe. Heartbeat dropping.
Circuit shortening. Probably some dust.
Heartbeat now 30, dropping fast. The heart flutter. He's dying.
Do something, Captain.
Can we? Take an hour to figure it out. What happens if we get him out of there?
He'll die in seconds if we don't.
Been sleeping. 2 centuries, we estimate. Landing party of Enterprise. Come in.
Go ahead, boarding party. We read you.
Lock in on Dr. McCoy's beam. He's transporting back with a casualty we discovered here.
Magnificent.
And with that, we get the curse of Khan. Khan!
I shall leave you as you left me. As you left her. Marooned for all eternity in the center of a dead planet. Buried alive. Buried alive. Khan! Khan!
One of my favorite from the original Star Trek series, Space Seed. So, that's it for me, 2 out of 5, and I'll pass it over to Bobby.
Thank you, Robert.
5 out of 5, sorry.
Thank you very much. this episode actually reminds me of the old Laugh-In program on NBC, where I believe it was Artie Johnson who used to say, very interesting but stupid, because that's pretty much what this is. It's a very entertaining story, but it is, of course, completely asinine. I don't have a whole lot to add to what Lynn and Robert have already said about this, pointed out all the inconsistencies, but I will say this. When I learned to read as a very young child, whenever that was, I immediately noticed one thing, and that is that if you're going to read a fictional story, you've got to be careful to be too analytical about it because you'll never enjoy any of them. You've got to give writers a wide berth on stuff. If you watch a story and you start saying, that's ridiculous, my mother was like that. She could never watch anything without saying, that's ridiculous. But if it's ridiculous, you haven't got a story. I mean, of course it's idiotic. Characters routinely do stupid things. Things happen that seem absolutely impossible. And that's what fiction is all about. So you have to kind of look the other way. Now, there are a lot of Twilight Zone stories where you have to look the other way. There may not be anyone that's worse than this. But it is still an entertaining story in spite of all the stupidity that's involved. As I have been doing lately on this show, I went to IMDb to see what other people thought about it, and there were some interesting comments that reminded me of a few things that I had not occurred to me. One person over there wrote, the main problem is the mean guy, the mastermind of the whole scheme, displays incredible brilliance in planning and pulling off suspended animation, and then for some reason seems to wake up afterwards with the IQ of a raisin. I agree with that. He's incredibly stupid. Anybody who can come up with this scheme and then not know what to do afterwards is a complete idiot, and that's what he does. Even more interesting is this whole business about the gold that they stole. This person says the price of gold averaged $35.25 per ounce in 1961. 50 years later, on May 18, 2011, which is when this person posted about this, it's valued at $1,492.60 per ounce. over 42 and a third times as much as before. So it certainly has gone up, but the rate of inflation has gone up so rarely. In the end, it probably evens out. There's probably nothing to be gained from that. And I agree with what Lynn said and what Robert said, which is that the 100 years really makes no sense. Why do 100 years? Why not do 50 years? 50 years would make more sense. And not only that, they're going to end up 100 years in the future. And how are they going to deal with anything, even if they get away with this? How in the world could you possibly live 100 years in the future? You're not dressed properly. You don't know what's going on in the world. Even if gold is still even worth more money than it was before, you're going to have a really, really tough time adapting to the world. All these things, of course, greed causes you to forget all of that. But they left a whole bunch of things out. They think that 100 years later, they're just going to get up and be able to deal with the world. They're imagining things. And, of course, the other things are obvious. Somebody also wrote, if everything you swiped is now worthless, don't lose heart. You'll clean up once people find out you actually invented a working suspended animation machine. That's true. He should have made money more honestly. And instead of trying to steal it, should have said, guess what I came up with? I have a suspended animation machine. That would have made him a pretty good amount of money. The other things are obvious. That is the fact that a truck can sit for 100 years and then start right up. As Lynn and I discussed together earlier today, everybody gets up at the same time, which is preposterous. And
the fact that they started up the truck, and wouldn't you think after 100 years they'd be thrilled to be able to start up the truck, and then he destroys it, the idiot.
Well, this person says even if the gas didn't evaporate, it still doesn't make it. I mean, the gasoline is not going to last for 100 years.
Right, but
not then
he destroys it. But he destroys it. I mean, I would have taken whatever gas I could get and get wherever I could.
I mean, you talked about cars. When I was a teenager, my first car was a 1959 Plymouth, and it didn't start if it got cloudy outside. If it just started to look like it was going to rain, it already wouldn't start. So the very idea that it could sit all that time is absolutely preposterous. So all of this is ridiculous because they get up right away and they're able to walk around and talk to each other, which is not especially funny. I don't know about anybody else, but earlier today, Lynn told me she was going to go food shopping, and I fell asleep for about 45 minutes. And when she went out, she said, okay, I'm going out, and I woke up, and I said, going where? I didn't even know what she told me earlier, and that was less than an hour. So I can just imagine what would happen if I was asleep for 100 years. But they seem to be cognizant of everything. They know exactly where they are, what they're doing. So it's actually preposterous, all of it. But in spite of that, it still is a very entertaining episode. It's really, as far as I'm concerned, just science fiction. And you got to throw everything overboard and then say, yeah, I know. It's absolutely inane that any of this stuff could really take place. Whether or not gold would be worth anything in 100 years, I don't know. It certainly still is worth it now, and we're halfway through. So in another 50 years, it just probably will be worth it. I don't know what the likelihood is that we're going to be able to make gold just because we want it. That really doesn't make any sense. So I think Sterling knew all of this when he wrote this, and he just decided, you know, to stick with the story itself. And I'm sure he knew that viewers were going to look at it with a great deal of skepticism.
Don't you think maybe he was just he wrote this one figuring that he had a good sense of humor? Once it let everybody know he had a good sense of humor.
It could have been done as a humorous episode, but I think there was too much temptation to make the robbers really nasty and brutal. All the rest of this business about trying to get across the desert in the heat is obvious, although I don't think it would make much difference. If the sun went down, you still wouldn't be able to do it. And maybe the funniest thing is that thing that they're drinking out of seems to go on forever. It looks to me like it would last about 10 minutes. Somehow they managed to walk and walk and walk and walk and keep drinking out of it. It's quite remarkable. But maybe the most bizarre thing about the whole episode really has nothing to do with the episode. And that's Rod Serling at the end of it, at least on the DVD version, hawking cigarettes. I mean, that is really scary to see that. Here's a man who had several heart attacks. He had a bad heart. And here he is telling people to smoke and smoke it himself. And it's really kind of disturbing to see that. this person's IMD wrote, what was more remarkable than the twist ending? How about Rod Serling hawking Oasis cigarettes during the commercial break? It was the first time in 60 episodes that he personally plugged a product. But even with his endorsement, the brand didn't last long. This person says, in fact, I don't even remember the brand. I'm afraid I do. Because when I was a kid, about 8 years old, I had a brother and sister who were 10 and 14 years older than me. And we lived down the street from a drugstore, and they sent me to get them cigarettes. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life, but I've bought thousands of them. An 8-year-old kid could go into a drugstore and just ask for packs of cigarettes and have them handed right over to him, which is exactly what was done to me.
I do have to mention something here, though. Rod Serling never wanted to do this commercial.
Oh, I know.
Didn't. He fought against doing these commercials, and the sponsor said, well, you know, you're going to do this commercial, and they needed the sponsorship at that time because they had a very low budget, and it's either he do these commercials or we're going to take our sponsorship away, and CBS didn't want him to do it. He didn't want to do it, but they ended up negotiating that he would do a few commercials, and he was not happy about it. He knew that they were killing him.
Oh, I'm sure he wasn't, and I don't doubt at all the pressure from a sponsor to want somebody like Rod Serling to get out there and hawk cigarettes. But that's always bothered me because I remember exactly where I was when I heard that Rod Serling had died, and I was just furious because I thought to myself, well, of course he died because he's been smoking cigarettes all along. And this was before it was known exactly how easily they killed people.
He smoked 6 packs a day. He smoked 6 packs a day.
Well, then it's a, how old was he? That was he 50 something, early 50s or something?
He was 50 years old. He died at 50, and he smoked 6 packs of cigarettes.
I don't know how he got that far. It's just absolutely amazing, but it's really disturbing to see him standing there doing that, and then acting as if to say, "You haven't lived until you smoked these cigarettes," when you know that it's actually enough to kill a person.
Right.
So overall, I gave this episode a 3. I would really have liked to have given it more than that, but it's very hard to just discount everything. It all depends on how you take it. And how much is when I watch Twilight Zone, I watch it just for entertainment. If it's an entertaining story, then that's fine. If it's ridiculous, same thing there. But this is just another one of those stories, and it's endless, absolutely endless. Characters go forward in time. Characters go back in time. No matter where they go and no matter what they do, they are never successful. It never, ever works out. You think that they would have learned something by now. I mean, this reminds me of the episode back there where Russell Johnson found himself all of a sudden facing Lincoln's assassination. It doesn't matter where they go. They can't seem to change it. History can't be changed. And if you're going to if you're going to steal something big and then think nobody's going to notice it, that's another thing. And I found the interest, I think it was Lynn who mentioned about this, or Rob or somebody mentioned, would anybody have found them in all those years? I don't know. In a cave like that, I don't know. They might not have found them. Oh, and another thing, when they wake up, aside from waking up all at the same time, for visual reasons, so we can see it, the one person who didn't make it, his bones are there. I mean, you can see a ring on his finger. I'm afraid it doesn't take 100 years for a body to disintegrate. It doesn't take that long. You can't dig up somebody out of the cemetery today and expect that you're going to find all kinds of bones. That doesn't work that way. So there's a lot of craziness that goes on here, but I was so young then, I wasn't thinking about that kind of stuff. I was just watching it for reasons of being entertained. And I think it is basically an entertaining story. I know one thing, it makes me thirsty to watch it because it's very realistic. To watch them walking across the desert with absolutely nothing to drink. And how stupid can you possibly be? I like characters in stories who are greedy because they never realize that none of that stuff is going to do you any good. If you don't have any food and you can't stay alive, if you don't have any water and you can't stay alive, all kinds of things, it doesn't really matter what kind of money you've got. It isn't going to do you a bit of good, but nobody ever, ever learns that at all. So it was entertaining, idiotic. You kind of laugh at it at the end and say, yeah, that's how I figured it would turn out. But still, a very entertaining story. Like I said, 3 out of 5. I took 2 points off just because it asked me to look the other way a little too much. But it's still a good story. All righty, Lynn, back to you.
Yes, and I want to turn it over to Dave. But, Dave, I got to ask you something. a few episodes ago, I guess it was, you had said something about that you were surprised that Bobby gave a certain episode a 4, and you said that I'm surprised because he rarely gives a high rating to things.
What was that? What episode was that?
I'm not sure. Remember, there was an episode where he said that he was surprised that you gave it a high rating.
Yeah, I just don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I can't think which one it was, but was it REM? No, it wasn't. Long Distance Call. Long Distance Call.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
And, yeah,
oh, I have plenty of episodes I've given a high rating to. I don't know about that.
And Dave said that he was surprised that you give a high rating to something. He wasn't used to seeing you give a 4 or 5 rating things. But Dave, you've been around a while now. Do you really not remember when Bobby has given high ratings like Eye of the Beholder and Hitchhiker and a lot of other episodes? Dave?
Is he here?
He's here. I know he's here.
I think you made him send me any love.
He didn't leave.
We can't hear you, Dave.
Dave?
I'm sorry, Dave. We
he
cannot hear
talking.
You.
He says he's talking.
Yeah.
Really?
Aw.
Well, maybe you can write it and you can read it.
Oh, wait, he's going to try. No, he's coming back in. He's going to try to come back in.
Now, while we wait for Dave to come back in, it's just, like I said, this story is just incredible trying to believe all the stuff that went on with it.
The reason I brought that up, I remember that Dave was saying something that he was so happy to see that, Bobby had given a 4 to something. He said, I don't remember him ever giving such a high rating then.
Well, wait till we get to the last season of Living Doll. I consider that the best episode of the whole series.
Yeah. Well, sort of. Oh, here he is.
He's back in.
There he is. Are you there, dear? There you are. Hang on. I'm sorry about that. I told you I was dog sitting.
Seems to be a dog barking somewhere. I don't know where.
You there, Dave? We got you on mute, it looks like.
It's not working, that's for sure. I think Dave should type it in and Lynn should read it.
Well, you know how talk she is. It's some days.
Dave, can we hear
backs
you?
Up.
Dave, can you get in?
He was so shocked that I liked something, he's speechless.
Now, why was it because of that? No, I think he's just having problems. I think he's just having problems. Well, this is very unusual for Dave not to be able to get in.
Well, sometimes talk show has his moments.
I didn't know that. Gee, I'm surprised. I didn't know that. I never have any problems, do I, Robert?
Yeah, like that one show with the outtakes at the end.
That was really good. I really liked that, by the way. That was a lot of fun. No, I never have any problems getting in. I'm flawless here. Aw, Dave. Aw, poor. Let me mute him and then unmute him. Maybe that works.
Yeah, try that and see what happens.
Is he saying anything in the chat room? Because I'm not on the computer. I can't see it.
No. He
said he was talking and he came back.
He can't get. Oh, I really want to hear what he thought about this episode.
Well, if he doesn't get in here today, we'll just give him time on the next show to do it.
I know I didn't lose him while I was talking to him because he was here the whole time. He was here the whole time, so I didn't lose him while I was talking to him. But,
well, I know I had problems the first time calling in, and the second time I was able to get in. Okay, he's back. So hopefully he's got it solved.
I have a feeling this isn't going to work today.
Dave? Nah,
tell him on the next show. We'll give him time at the beginning of the show to say what he wanted to say.
Absolutely. I definitely want him to come in and talk. I mean, that's a shame. Yeah, Felix. Yeah, I was 16. You were 14. Yeah, when Rod Serling died, we're talking about when Rod Serling died. Felix from New Jersey says he was 14 and I was 16. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that very, very clearly. Oh, Dave, I'm sorry. I wish. Oh. Okay. All right. So, all right. Now I'm going to rely on Robert here because I did not check, as I usually do, when the next show is. Robert, when is our next show?
It should be on the 24th of September. Should be the next show.
Okay, September 24th, and it will be The Silence. Am I correct about that?
It's going to be an interesting one to talk about.
Yes. Oh, yes. Now, that one I am looking very forward to, and I will not be silent on that one, because I am very, very adamant about my feelings about that episode. So, yes, I'm looking forward to that. So, September, say it again, Robert. September what?
September the 24th will be the next one.
September 24th, 2 weeks from now. Hopefully, Dave will be able to come back in again. I missed him so much today. But I want you, Dave, to get back. That's all right. No, don't be sorry. He's saying he's sorry. Don't be sorry. How about with me? When I got knocked off a dozen times by Skype, these things happen. So don't be sorry. Mm-hmm. Just come back in 2 weeks from now and tell us what you thought of this episode, and then we can talk about The Silence, and that'll be September 24th, and I'm very much looking forward to that. So I will see everyone, hopefully Felix and Steve and everybody here 2 weeks from today. And hold on one more time. Dave? He's filling me. All right. Okay. Thanks, Dave. Anyway, have a great weekend, everybody. And we will see you 2 weeks from now.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Twilight Zone has been brought to you by...
Here's an item we forgot. You see this? It holds a promise for anyone who smokes. It's Oasis. And as its name implies, it promises you the most refreshing, the softest taste of all. Try Oasis. I think you'll like it.